Hello, and welcome back to We Watch Movies, the podcast where we watch movies and then talk about them. I'm your host, Elijah, and as always, with me is Forrest to talk about a movie. How's it going, Forrest?
It's going pretty well. How are you doing?
Not too bad. It's raining right now, but it's pretty
Is it?
calming.
Well, I've always found the rain to be soothing. Seems to be a nice sunny day here. I'm always down for that too.
Yes, that's good. I'm glad it's sunny and raining at the same time.
Yes. It's a nice blend of everything nice.
We are talking about Bad Times at the El Royale today, which I'm very excited about. And then in the second segment, we will argue about a thing in that's controversial. And
That's
it'll
right.
be a good
That's right.
time.
Or
Yeah.
bad time.
Or bad time at the El Royale.
On the We Watch Movies podcast.
Who knows? We'll
We'll
find
see.
out. Anyway, Forrest, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, so I would just like to make this public announcement that this is, and I hate to say it, the final episode of We Watch Movies.
Yes.
And it's been a great ride. I've
It
enjoyed
has.
it. We've put out almost 30 episodes. That's really awesome. That means we've got 30 plus hours of us talking about movies nonstop out there on the interweb.
Yes.
It's been an interesting experience. I've definitely enjoyed it, but it's a natural time for it to come to an end, I think.
Yeah, we've both decided that it would just be better to wind it down. And what better way to end it than with Bad Times at the El Royale, the underperforming cult classic from 2018.
Is it a cult classic?
I think it will be, honestly. It is in my
Interesting.
brain because well, spoiler alert, I love it. I don't
I
know if
saw the
Forrest loves
box.
it.
I saw the box office returns, and
Yeah,
it
it's
was like
pretty sad.
31.3 to,
It's pretty
and they said
sad.
32, and I was like, "Well, that's disappointing."
Yeah, really
I mean,
disappointing.
who would have thought you spent 32 million on a film? Surely you're going to make some money back.
Yeah.
Well, I guess not.
I'm sure it made some back in like digital set, like home and digital sales.
They made $4 last night.
Excellent. They made 15 bucks when I bought this as soon as I had watched it.
Well,
Anyway, ready to get going?
we should throw out there's a spoiler alert in
Yes.
effect for Bad Times at the El Royale. We do have an Instagram account, but that's kind of pointless if we're ending the show.
You can
So
still follow it if you want. Nothing will
go
be
follow
posted
it.
there.
And it'll just be an archive, a
Yeah,
shrine
there you
to
go.
the show that so many people missed out on. Who knows?
True. Maybe
If we
it'll
get
be
enough
discovered in the
followers.
future.
Yeah, if we get enough followers in the show's death, then maybe we can come back. Doubtful,
Maybe.
but so that's
Anyway.
all I have to say. Why don't you start talking about El Royale?
So this, as I said, is a 2018 movie written and directed by Drew Goddard, most known previously for The Cabin in the Woods. It stars a whole lot of people: Jeff Bridges, Cynthia Erivo, Dakota Johnson, John Hamm, Kaylee Spaney, Lewis Pullman, and Chris Hemsworth. And that really is basically everyone in the whole movie for the most part. There's a few goons, but that's about it. And it is the story of four. It takes place in, I don't even know specifically, maybe the 60s,
I think
70s.
it takes place around January 31st of 1969.
There you go. I was right. You know historical stuff better than I do.
It's the Richard Nixon press conference
Yeah,
that's
I didn't.
shown briefly.
That's why I figured it was that era. I didn't remember what year that was. So yeah, it takes place presumably around 1969. And it's the story of four strangers coming to check into the El Royale Hotel at the same time. And well, to be frank, shenanigans ensue. We have Jeff Bridges playing Father Daniel Flynn. He's a priest. And we have Cynthia Erivo playing a lovely singer who is staying at the hotel before a show in Reno. We have Dakota Johnson playing Emily, I believe. And she's just kind of there. That's not
what she put in the guest book.
No, it's not what she put in the guest book. And we have John Hamm playing Lamarne or something. I forget his name. It's a little bit of an odd name, but he is a vacuum cleaner salesman. Totally.
It seems like John Hamm became an actor to appear in films and shows that occur in the 1960s.
You know what? I agree. He fits that vibe very well.
Yeah, he does.
And then later, Chris Hemsworth comes in playing a cult leader, so that's fun.
Hey, cult leaders are always fun. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Never caused any problems, from what I understand.
Not once. Anyway, I'll give you my initial impressions, and then I'm really excited to hear what you thought first. So right. I really love this movie. If I had to use like a very short amount of time to describe this movie, this doesn't do it justice, but I would say it's Tarantino with a heart. The characters in this movie are some of my favorite I've seen in a long time. And I feel like each and every one of them has an emotional core and an emotional arc, except for maybe Chris Hemsworth, throughout the whole movie. And it really starts off as this really intriguing, interesting, like what the heck is going on sort of movie. And it turns up being a really powerful story of redemption and forgiveness, I think. And it's, for me, really the best praise I can give it is that both times I've watched it, and I was so glad this was true on my second viewing yesterday, it makes me forget I'm watching a movie. It just sweeps me away, and I am fully invested in what's happening on the screen. And that's something special that not a lot of movies have. So I really, really love this movie, and I can't wait to talk about it more. What do you think of Bad Times at the El Royale, Forrest?
It's interesting that you brought up Tarantino, because I was watching it the whole time and thinking this is very much a Tarantino film without the Tarantino. Especially it reminded me of, what's the film? Hateful Eight?
Yeah, except good. I hope you think it was good.
What? I'm curious to, yeah. Curious to see what I wonder what you think I think of it.
Well, the way you're awkwardly talking about it makes me think you didn't like it, which is sad, but
I haven't said anything about it.
I thought you'd at least enjoy it, and I thought the Tarantino-ness wouldn't be that bad for you, because it really isn't. It's really just kind of the whole concept of a whole bunch of strangers interacting that's Tarantino-esque. It's very different. It has actual character and actual emotional arcs and interesting plot points and all that. So I thought you'd at least enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like a subdued Tarantino film in some regards. You've got those shocking instances of violence, but they're very brief and they're very subtle in comparison to a Tarantino flick. You have
it's not grotesque in any way.
No, okay. So I thought this film was okay. I thought it was too long, about half an hour too long. The inciting incident being the murder of John Hamm's character.
Yeah.
Was what, 40 minutes into the film, something like that? And then we had the instance where Flynn and the singer, I wish I remember, what's her name?
The character's name?
Yeah.
Darlene.
Darlene. Those two were good. The shot, the scene of them sitting in the car together, that was about at the 1 hour. What was it? An hour and a, we still had an hour left in the film at that point. And then we get all the Bobby Lee stuff, and there's still like half hour of the film left.
Billy Lee.
So I thought, Bill, did I say Bobby Lee?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, same difference. Who cares? So I thought it plotted along a bit. I thought the plot was maybe a bit too convoluted for its own good. I understand where they're trying to get, and I thought that was kind of interesting, unique way of storytelling, but I think it was maybe overdone. And like I said, okay. Too long. About half an hour too long. Could have been wrapped up.
I'm curious, what would you have cut?
I would have cut out a lot of, I think you could have cut down on a lot of screen time purely off of not using that device of going back and the way that the story was broken up and going between each character and getting different POVs. I thought, I think they went so far in that direction that it kind of hurt them. I think if you cut that back a bit, you could have at least got 20 minutes off the film. That would have brought it to around the 2 hour mark.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
But let's talk. But yeah.
I'm not going to really argue with that. It is a long movie and there is a lot of early character work, and it is, it does take a while for that inciting incident to happen. And I know I'm hypocritical here after what I said about The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but for me here, it really works because I feel the characters are so intriguing and interesting, and watching them interact in various ways is so fascinating to me, more so than it was in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, that I don't, that doesn't really bother me here, but I certainly won't fault you for feeling that way about this, because the simple fact is you're right. The inciting incident does take about 40 minutes to happen. And in any other movie, I'd probably have an issue with that too.
Right. The other thing that I don't know if you want to necessarily call this a critique, but every instance of violence is very sudden.
Yeah.
Every time someone's shot or killed, and it kind of loses its shock value after the second or third time it happens.
That's fair.
So it's kind of like, oh, wow, they just killed that person. I didn't expect that. But then by the second or third time it happens, it's like, okay, well, that was kind of obvious.
Yeah, there's multiple instances of a character shooting another character and it happens. Like, I appreciate that there's like no monologue. There's no point where the shooter starts talking about things or listens to the victim. Like when Emily, Dakota Johnson's character, shoots John Hamm, like he starts talking, like trying to defend himself, and she just shoots him. Like she doesn't care. And I appreciated that, because if you're in that situation in real life, which hopefully you aren't, you're not going to listen to some guy talk for a while. But you're right. It probably does lose its shock value after the second time. One thing I do want to bring up, though, and I'm curious, I think one of the strongest, I think there's a ton of strengths with this movie, but I think the performances are just out of this world. And I was wondering if you thought the same.
Yeah, I can't really argue on that point. I think basically Chris Hemsworth is playing out of type.
Yep.
He does have that. He's developed great as an actor where he's kind of half serious, half kind of very casual and loose and goofy. Yeah. Except they're utilizing that trait in a very disturbingly creepy way in this film.
Yeah.
Which I thought was unique. I thought he did a good job. I think that Darlene, I thought she was great.
Yes.
I thought she was a nice fresh of breath air, kind of the normal person in this night in crazy land, you know.
Also, she can sing. Like, wow, she can sing.
Yeah. I've heard better.
I see what you did there.
I've not, but and then you've got obviously John Hamm doing his thing.
Yep.
It was good. And Father Flynn, I mean, come on. It's the dude. He's great.
This may be overpraising to you, but Jeff Bridges as Daniel Flynn is one of my favorite performances I've ever seen. I just think he so perfectly embodies what it's like to struggle with growing old and losing your memory and forgetting things, and just the scenes where he and Darlene are talking. He just, the way he acts and clearly feels so sad about his condition, he makes it feel really real and tangible. And I think it's an incredible performance.
One of my favorite lines of dialogue is when he asks Darlene if he ever told her his name.
Yeah.
But I do want to ask you to convince me on something or help explain something to me.
Okay. Yeah.
And maybe it's something I missed. I certainly didn't try to shut myself off to the film. Like, oh, I hate this movie, or, oh, this movie is just meh, so I'm not going to pay attention.
Yeah, I totally believe you.
But at the end of the film, my takeaway is that we didn't really, and obviously there are arcs for the characters, be it Miles, be it Darlene and Flynn, specifically those three, and maybe perhaps exclusively those three, end up in a different place where they began, aside from being dead. I guess that's... But I don't know, the whole film, and maybe this is the crux of my dislike for it, or is that it kind of, and this goes back to maybe why I didn't like a film like The Hateful Eight, it didn't really mean anything. It kind of seemed pointless. And I wasn't necessarily satisfied with all of the, I wasn't necessarily satisfied with any of the character arcs. I think Miles was probably the most well-rounded. All the other characters that got killed off, there wasn't really any arc there. They just were something and then they died as that thing. Darlene and Flynn, I don't know how much they really changed other than forming some bond. And I think you can maybe explain that to me if I'm missing something. I think Miles had the best constructed arc, going from being the hotel clerk. We find out he's a junkie. We find out he's a perv because management wants him to film stuff, right? We find out that he is remorseful of his sins. And I think initially we think it might be the fact that he's doing drugs, or the fact that he's filming people, right? And then we find out that he was in Vietnam and that he was a excellent soldier. And so you can really see his struggle there. Though I thought the ending, that ending with Flynn posing as the priest, both knowing that he wasn't a priest, and maybe it meant more to you, but that just kind of felt like nothing. I know it was supposed to help him feel content in death, but it didn't really do anything for me.
Huh. That's interesting, because that, to me, that really solidified the movie as a favorite for me. So I'd love to try to talk about what I think of it. So Miles is clearly... I think clearly the heart of this movie. Like, Miles' arc toward forgiveness is, like you said, the most defined character arc, and everything kind of builds to that moment where he's dying, like you said.
Right.
And I think that moment pulls together specifically Flynn, Father Flynn. I think that brings his arc to a conclusion as well, because this whole movie for him really is less so about him getting money and more about him solidifying his identity, I think, because as it stands, he is a crook. He was imprisoned. And I think he's regretful of those things. I think he regrets stealing and being a robber like that. And I think subconsciously he takes on the priest persona because he wants to be better, even if he may not know that himself. And I think
that's an interesting take. I kind of like that.
Yeah. And I think him losing his memory is kind of like him willingly, or not willingly, obviously, but willfully forgetting that past, trying to move on from that past. And it comes full circle at the end when he does step into the priestly shoes and forgives Miles, that he kind of, in his own mind, erases that past for himself and is able to start new, even though he doesn't have much time left. It's kind of like a blank slate. It's redemption for him too, at least to himself. He feels he's accomplished what he wants to, and he's helped this boy, and he can start fresh. The money is done. He's finished with that quest or whatever is finished, and he can be who he thinks he should be now again, no matter how little time he has left. And I know you mentioned that neither him nor Miles, like, they both know he's not a real priest. I actually think Miles does think he's a real priest. I think Miles in that time is trying so hard to get forgiveness that his brain is telling him, like, he was probably just lying to Billy Lee to protect people. Jeff Bridges says, or Miles says as he's dying, "You're not a real priest." And Jeff Bridges says, "Of course I am." And I think that's all Miles needed to hear to be convinced, because the whole last hour of the movie, his whole purpose is just to talk to the priest, because he so desperately wants to absolve for his sins, which is really powerful if you think about it. He is scared of dying because of all he's done in life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so satisfying and so powerful that, even though, again, not a real priest, Jeff Bridges steps into that role for him and absolves his sins in a very, I think he genuinely means it. I think the interaction is very genuine. And I think Miles truly believes that he's been forgiven. And you and I both know he is forgiven because he believes. And I think he will go on to heaven. It's just such a powerful ending and statement about faith and forgiveness, that no matter what you do in life, there's always that chance for you. And like similar to Jeff Bridges, no matter what you do in life, you always have a second chance. And that's pretty amazing.
I thought it was interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding to believe that Flynn was going back for the money, not so much for the sake of the money, but for the fact that his brother died.
Exactly.
Hiding the money.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought that was a nice story beat, kind of, that he had left that past life behind, but he was going back because his brother died for that money. I thought that was nice.
Yeah. We get to see him at this point. He accepted what he's done, but he still feels like his brother has earned the right to be, quote unquote, avenged. Or it's probably a softer word for that, but yeah.
Well, it kind of means that his brother didn't die for nothing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I just think it works really well. I think Darlene, my one of my favorite moments, I'm gonna in a bit have to talk about my two favorite scenes, but one of my favorite specific moments is when Billy Lee's holding them all hostage, and I think it's interesting that he hates when it's quiet. It gives him the heebie-jeebies or whatever he says. And he's like, "Darlene, you're a singer, right? Sing for us." And one of my favorite lines is Father Flynn saying, "No, don't. He doesn't deserve to hear you sing." And I think that statement there is the completion of her arc, because throughout the whole movie, we've seen her beaten down in her past. We've seen her kind of just be a passenger on this wild ride. We see her be the one who really does defy Billy Lee. And just hearing that validation that her singing is good and that she is worth something because of that is very, it's great for her. And then she does sing, but I don't think it's obviously not for Billy Lee. I think she sings for Father Flynn so that he can hear her sing one more time, just in case they die. And I love that. So it's wonderful. I love this movie. I think the characters are some of the best written characters I've seen in a while. For me, at least, they worked really well.
Yeah. Like I said, I thought they were well acted. I don't necessarily agree that they were extraordinarily well written, but
yeah, that's okay. Sorry, I know I've been talking a lot, but I want to know, I don't get the sense that you hated this movie.
No, I didn't hate this movie. It was pretty, hate is very strong. I'm at least neutral on it.
Okay. Well then give me, what are some positives beyond the performances? What are some scenes or something that you enjoyed?
The hotel was very, I thought it was an interesting setting. Obviously the mystery of the hallway.
Yep.
I thought that was really neat. Let's see. Obviously I already mentioned it before, Jeff Bridges' performance I think was great. That's a positive. Darlene, that's a great character. And then that scene, the scene of them digging for the money in, yes, Darlene's room while she's singing. I saw that they had to film that something like 20 takes to get that right, and I thought it was really well done. One of the highlights of the film.
I am so glad you brought that up. That scene is amazing where she claps to cover up the hammer strikes.
Right.
That's brilliant. I think there's a lot of brilliant directing here. There's really good framing. One of the better shots is after Emily shoots out the mirror and accidentally hits Miles behind it. We have a shot. We see Emily and Rose reflected in the sides of the mirror that haven't been shattered. And then we see the shattered hole in the middle, which is really good shot. And then we get, you know, like,
Go ahead. No, I was saying, I'm not sure how they would have done it, because otherwise I'm not sure how John Hamm's character would have known that there was a hostage in that room, but it would have been really fascinating if they had been able to frame the story in a way that the first time we discover the hidden hallway is when she shoots John Hamm and the glass shatters. I think that would have been fascinating, and it could have been easily done story-wise with the way they were backtracking and kind of jumping around in the story narrative-wise.
Maybe put John Hamm's section second.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Okay.
That way he wouldn't have, that way it would have just been a complete mystery as to why he knew to bust into the room and he got shot, and then we kind of backed up and saw his POV. That would have been interesting.
Okay. I like that. That's interesting. Yeah. That's a cool idea. Well done.
Thank you. There we go. I just improved the film.
One of my other favorite scenes is the introduction of the hallway, where we get like this 3 or 4 minute one take of John Hamm's character walking down the hallway, looking through the one-way mirrors or whatever, seeing all the room occupants doing weird stuff. And I think it's a really effective setup for each person's story. And like, at least for me, you see Jeff Bridges digging up the room and you immediately connect it to the kind of prologue type scene we get at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, so he's looking for that. That's interesting. So he's probably not a priest. We get Darlene singing, which I believe she did live for that scene. Was not a recording. Mm-hmm. And then we get Emily bringing in Rosie, which obviously sets off some alarms, and I think it's just really well executed, a really fun set, really good long take. It's great really stuff.
Disturbing.
Yeah, very disturbing.
It's getting weirder.
things get real weird. Yeah.
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 Also, it's an interesting, I thought it was an interesting detail that all of the rooms on the Nevada side had the hidden hallway. I assume the rooms on the California side don't have the hidden hallway, and that's probably why they were a dollar more.
Could be, yeah. That's very true. To encourage people to go to the Nevada side.
Yeah.
I think there's some very effective like visual storytelling. This movie's very light on exposition, which I think is good writing, especially when John Hamm is finding the hallway. Just you see him like counting out steps, and he doesn't have to tell you what he's doing. You understand, oh, there's some weird discrepancy between the size of the room and the size of the building, so there must be something extra there. And when he's finding all the bugs and everything, I think it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was interesting. Him going and retrieving the FBI's bugs, but then finding all the other bugs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious. One of the biggest complaints I've seen or heard about this movie, and I'm curious what you thought, is a lot of people were upset that the FBI storyline was basically completely dropped.
Yeah, yeah. What did I think about that?
Yeah, were you bothered by that? Did you notice it? Or was it kind of just like, okay.
Well, if you're going to kill the FBI agent, what else is there to tell? They told him not to interfere. He interferes. He gets killed. How else can that story be finished in one night, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Because
if it was the FBI multi-day,
doesn't know he's dead.
Yeah. If it was a multi-day thing, then the FBI shows up, you know, if the FBI didn't show up and the film takes place over the course of several days, that would have been odd, but it's one night.
I'm glad you agree. No,
if that's the decision you're making to kill the FBI agent an hour, 48 minutes, an hour into the film, then how are you supposed to continue that story? And ultimately it would negate from, I guess, the central core of the film, which would have ended up being Miles and Darlene and Flynn.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was interesting how, similar to Psycho, our POV, who we thought was our main protagonist, gets killed off very soon in the film.
Yeah, oh, very true.
Spoilers for Psycho. Sorry, Elijah.
I know the general story of Psycho. I've seen Bates Motel, so.
Oh, I don't know what that is, so.
Oh,
I know what the Bates Motel is. I just don't know what you mean.
It's the prequel TV series.
There's a prequel TV series?
Yeah, it's called Bates Motel. It's really good and messed up if you want to see it.
Huh. Interesting.
It follows, like, teenage Norman Bates.
Norman Bates is a freak, man. That guy's crazy.
Oh, he is. I've seen the show.
You know what's interesting, and this has nothing to do with Bad Royale, Bad Times. What's interesting about Psycho is, I think it was directed in, what was it, 68, somewhere around there? And Vertigo, no, I'm sorry. I think it came out, I don't remember which came out first. I think Psycho came out after Vertigo. And Vertigo was in color. And then I think it was like 8 years later, Psycho comes out, and he used a television crew to film the movie, and they shot it in black and white. And Psycho holds up so much better visually than Vertigo does.
I just looked it up, and Vertigo was 1958 and Psycho was 1960.
Yeah. Okay. So two years apart, but just the black and white has aged so much better than what they used for to color Vertigo.
Yeah, I believe it. Which do you like better, Psycho or Vertigo? I know you like both.
I liked Vertigo just slightly better. I thought the story was interesting.
Cool. Anyway, Bad Times at the El Royale. Do you want to give us your final thoughts?
Well, actually, I do have a question for you.
Oh, yeah.
Who do you think was on the tape? Do you think they had someone in mind, or do you think it was just nondescript?
I don't know. I think they had someone in mind. My brain is like maybe it was Nixon, which seems a little unrealistic, but also not too unrealistic. What about you? Did you think?
I think I know who it is. I think it is Bobby Kennedy. I think Bobby Kennedy is on the tape. The Miles says makes reference to the film being him shooting the film a year prior, deciding not to send the film to Manitoba. And they also reference that they haven't been as active since the election. And Nixon won the election, we know, in 1972, Watergate and all that. I think it was 1972. It may have been 73. I can't remember. But my theory is that Nixon and his goons ran the hotel, and that Bobby Kennedy, who was running against Nixon that year, that's who the tape was of. And since Nixon won the election and Kennedy was assassinated, management hadn't been as active.
That makes sense. Yeah, and it is referenced that he's dead. The
Yes,
guy, whoever's on the
very
tape,
much
is
so.
dead. That's probably correct. And I fully believe that Drew Goddard had someone in mind. Like, he's a good enough writer to have someone in mind. Yeah, that's awesome. That makes the movie better for me.
Well, good. I guess I'm glad.
Yeah. Anyway, what are
All
your
right.
final thoughts on Bad Times at the El Royale?
Final thoughts. We have some very good performances, notably Jeff Bridges, Chris Hemsworth, the actress who played Darlene. The first act, setting up with the FBI, interesting. Second act, also interesting, kind of figuring out how it gets resolved. Third act with Chris Hemsworth's character, well, I thought he did the role well. I thought it just kind of went downhill from there. Too long, should have cut about 20 or 30 minutes off of it. The story was a little too convoluted for its own good. I would give this film probably, I'm gonna give it 2 stars.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
Though it did have Bernadette in it, and I am a big fan of Bernadette.
Soundtrack is great. I like the soundtrack.
Yeah. I heard Bernadette come on, and I was like, oh, hey, I know that song.
Yeah. So
It's the Four Tops.
I think I clearly like this movie more than you.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I absolutely love this movie. I think it's excellent. I think the script is very strong. I think the direction is really strong from a visual standpoint and a storytelling standpoint. I love the performances. I don't think there's a weak link here. And really everything clicks for me on an emotional level. Especially with Miles and Father Flynn. And I truly, truly adore this movie to the point where I am considering adding it to my top 10. Not sure on yet that yet. The jury's still out. But I told you yesterday that my heart wants to give it 5 stars and my brain says 4.5 because it's not absolutely perfect. I think some of the flaws you pointed out are valid, but I when I watch it, I don't really see those flaws because, like I said, I kind of forget I'm watching a movie. So I've decided to go with my heart, and I'm going to give it
No.
5 stars.
I see the flaws, but I'm going to ignore them.
Yeah, just like, the Good, Bad, and the Ugly 5 stars.
Yeah, no, I'm not dissing you for that. Though my brain does tell me Good, Bad, and Ugly is 5 stars. So,
yeah, my brain disagrees with your brain.
Well, your brain is wrong. So,
oof. Yeah, Bad Times at the El Royale. If it sounds like you'd like it, you'll probably love it. If it doesn't sound like your cup of tea, then it probably isn't.
I had no clue what it was.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about this film going into.
Yeah.
Not sure where it was going to land. I was like, oh, it's like a crime FBI.
Nope. It's an interesting mystery trying to figure out what's going on. Nope. Yeah. It's actually trying to take down a cult leader.
I was expecting the narrator to show up 2/3 of the way through the film.
That would have been funny, but also not good.
That would have been funny because it would have been horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. That is it for Bad Times at the El Royale. Mm-hmm. We can move it on to our second segment. That's controversial.
What? That was the first segment. The first segment's where we politely disagree. The second segment's where we start screaming at each other.
Exactly. Okay. So
you have a controversial statement?
Yes, I do. Just like last time. When we argued about Solo, I will give my thoughts and I will try to be calm and collected and factual, obviously very factual.
Yes.
And Forrest will return in kind with his very factual false argument. And we will go from there and hopefully not interrupt each other too much.
And I will say, I have no clue what the statement is going to be. So this will be interesting.
Yes. I am going to take the easy route here and stay in the Star Wars universe because it's easy to argue about.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to say Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, is a bad Star Wars movie. No reaction. Cool. Okay, I'll just go right into my reasoning.
No, it's just I agree with you. So I was like, kind of confused. Why is this controversial?
You don't agree with me. You love this movie.
I don't agree with you.
I think Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, is a bad Star Wars movie. And I think that is because of two things. One, actually more than two things. I'm going to get into that. There are interesting things in this movie. And 100% of the interesting things are Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, and the Emperor in that room. That is by far and away the only part of this movie worth watching. And it only takes up about 20 or 30 minutes total. And it's tragic because surrounding that great core is the longest, most dragged out, and boring opening to any Star Wars movie, followed by the affront that is Ewoks, followed by the affront that is the Battle of Endor, followed by the total rehash of Episode 4, blowing up the Death Star. Again, if we complained about it in Episode 7, I can complain about it in Episode 6. This is a bottom tier Star Wars movie. It is only better than maybe Rogue One and Attack of the Clones, but we don't talk about Attack of the Clones really. I will leave it there for now. Go ahead.
Okay, a couple of things. First off, why all the hate for Attack of the Clones? That film is awesome.
It could be better.
You just said, let's not talk about it, as if it was the worst thing ever. It's not the worst thing ever.
It's the worst Star Wars movie. It's the worst Star Wars movie.
It is not the worst Star Wars
movie. Have you seen Anakin and Padme talking to each other on screen?
Yes. Yes.
That's enough. That's it.
I didn't say that it didn't have its flaws. I said it's not the worst Star Wars movie ever. In fact, I like it a lot. And I don't think anyone would disagree with me with Obi-Wan, Jango, and the clones is utterly fascinating. The only critique many people have, well, I won't say the only because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that have many critiques that they can find in anything, but the main critique is the Anakin Padme storyline. And yeah, that I understand that. I understand it could definitely have been better. George could definitely have been writing better dialogue. He definitely could have found actors, at least on Hayden Christensen's side, that felt more natural expressing that dialogue. So I'm not going to argue you there. Also, I realized that your initial statement was on Return of the Jedi, not Attack of the Clones. So I'm going to veer back into that. But I will say that Attack of the Clones is a awesome Star Wars film. Now,
if you can't tell, by the way, our Star Wars rankings are very different.
What's your number one Star Wars film?
Revenge.
Okay, well, my top two are Empire and Revenge, so.
Yeah, that's everyone's top two, I think. No, that's not true. Most people have 5 and 4, don't they?
That's not true. Yeah, no, that's not true. Okay. So, Return of the Jedi, you brought up the Ewoks. What is your single greatest gripe against the Ewoks?
They literally serve no purpose. If they were removed from the movie, it would not only be better, but nothing would really change. They are there to be cute and fuzzy and annoying, and I don't want to see 2-foot-tall teddy bears, sentient teddy bears, destroying an AT-ST. That is so dumb. Let me see our heroes destroying things instead of teddy bears throwing rocks at stormtroopers. That is so infuriating because this is the climax. This is the trilogy capper. This was the last Star Wars movie at the time. And we get to see teddy bears throwing rocks at scout troopers. Why?
Why not? So George said, why not? No, but you seemingly, I don't think anyone has an issue with Baby Yoda, the child. And he serves a similar purpose, although obviously his own.
What do you mean? He's the primary driving plot force.
He's the primary driving plot force, but he's also, for the majority of those episodes, just sitting there being cute, right?
Yes.
Right. So you have an issue with the Ewoks. I can get that. That's a fine critique. I don't understand your critique of Jabba's Palace. I don't think that is boring or drawn out or anything of that sort. I think it's awesome. I think it's a nice, well, I wouldn't say awesome. I think I do have some critiques of it. Look, I've never said that The Return of the Jedi was the greatest Star Wars film. I don't think I've ever said that to you.
No, you haven't. I'm not trying to say you did.
I do have some critiques of it, though I don't think those critiques add weight to the fact that you think it's the worst Star Wars film. The whole thing with Princess Leia, not a fan of that. But generally, Jabba's Palace, I think that's kind of fun. I think it's kind of interesting. I do think that it is what it goes on for, what, 30 minutes, I think?
It's like 30 and 35 minutes.
Yeah, ultimately, it's just bringing Han back because they didn't know if Harrison Ford was going to return after Empire Strikes. And it's. Yeah. It's essentially disconnected. It ties up everything we're hearing about Han having to go past Jabba, and I think we heard it mentioned in A New Hope. It's referenced several times in the so we get that payoff, and Jabba's is a slime ball. Obviously, it's killed. That's fun and all that. It's a adventure, and then it's the main story, and I will not lie when I say that there are several times in watching Return of the Jedi where I've just skipped to the part where they all have their conference meeting to plan the battle strategy against the star. And now I will say that your critiques of the Death Star, having a new Death Star, completely entirely because it's only the second time that we're doing the Death Star, not the third time, so we're not getting the critiques.
Right? Oh, I see.
No, but the assault itself, obviously, whether you agree with that or not, it is there. But the assault itself is entirely different than the assault on the Death Star the first time.
How different, though? It's space guys in spaceships trying to shoot a specific thing inside of a big ball.
That's what every Star Wars film does. That's what every Star Wars film is. It's all Star Wars space action, right?
Yeah, but
I mean, it's done in The Phantom Menace, right? Uh-huh. It's done in the opening of Revenge of the Sith. It's done in A New Hope. It's done in Return of the Jedi. It's done in The Force Awakens. It's done in The Last Jedi. It's done in the two anthology films. That is what you mentioned last time. It's classic Star Wars space action.
Except not I think all it's of those, some not of all the best. Things, no, not all the things you mentioned are going into a space ball to shoot a specific thing. Only four of them are. This episode one, yes.
Yeah, that, only four of them.
That's like 5 minutes. Episode four, which is excusable because it was the first one. Episode six is a complete rehash. It's literally Death Star 2. And then episode seven is abhorrently Death Star 3. But like Last Jedi, there's no. Revenge of the Sith, the opening is very different.
I didn't mention The Last Jedi. I said Rise of Skywalker, I think.
You said Last Jedi, but I think it was a mistake. Rise of Skywalker, what even happens in that movie? I'm trying to remember.
It's bad.
It's not terrible. It's
they have a giant space Exegol. No, it's definitely not. It is definitely not.
It's better. It's more entertaining.
No, it's not. Oh, it's definitely not. It's a fetch quest. The whole thing is a fetch quest. The whole thing is based on sheer luck. They fall into the sand pit and they find the knife by the snake. Oh, that's exactly what we needed. We go to the planet where the Death Star, the second Death Star, you know, the one that you're trashing now, where that is. And it's sitting in the water and Rey just happens to be standing in the exact right location to raise the knife to find exactly where she needs to go on the Death Star. And who knows how long the Death Star has been there, 30 years. And we are not going to say that it's been washed away or moved somehow since the knife has been made. Utterly ridiculous. Trying to find those pathway seekers or pathfinders, whatever they were, the Sith artifacts to find where Exegol is. It was a load of garbage.
Somehow it was still way better than 2-foot-tall teddy bears throwing rocks at scout troopers in the finale of the original trilogy.
I'd rather watch 2-foot-tall teddy bears than the abhorrent mess that the finale of Rise of Skywalker was. That it was literally the exact same ending as Avengers Endgame, except when all the ships came in, and, you know, Falcon said on your left to whoever it was, land, whoever, you know, all these ships showed up. And we saw what? We saw Wedge Antilles and we saw Lando and we're like, oh yeah, the cavalry has arrived. And that's literally it. We see, you know, 200,000 ships or whatever, and we know two people. Endgame did it so much better. And Disney tried to do it twice in the same year. It was stupid. It was so stupid.
I will not deny that ending. Endgame did it better. Endgame definitely did it better. But Rise of Skywalker was entertaining and had some of the best Star Wars moments of recent times.
No, removing the fact that Endgame already did it. It was a piss poor. They should have never done that. And also it flies in the face of The Last Jedi, where they send out the distress beacon and no one comes. Suddenly now everyone's going to show up and come because why? Lando Calrissian went to get everyone? That makes no sense. It's stupid.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not, but Rise of Skywalker as a whole is better than Return.
No, it's not. And then we have the ending where, you know, old Palps shocks himself to death again. Congratulations, Palp. After three trilogies and three films where you end up shocking yourself, you haven't learned. It's stupid. It's so utterly stupid. And I don't even have problems with like the force healing, that kind of stuff. I don't have an issue with that. I thought the exchange with Kylo and his father on the remnants of the Death Star, that was good. The fight with Rey, I thought that was kind of fun. I'm not saying that it didn't have good moments, but it was overall just stupid.
Hey, you just summed up my thoughts on Return of the Jedi perfectly.
Return of the Jedi is a much better film. And I'm not saying it's the best Star Wars film. I've never said it's the best Star Wars film, though it is by no means a bad film.
It's stupid. Also, it's really stupid, and it has one good scene.
One good scene?
Yes, Luke and Vader in the Emperor. That's the good scene. And everything else is really stupid.
Everything in relation to Luke and Darth Vader and Palpatine, that's all great. There's no arguing that. The assault on the Death Star, the whole space battle, I think that's great. I think that's a lot of fun. We get that it's a trap. That's great, right? Akbar, gotta love Akbar. Ewoks definitely could have been stupid. Gone without the Ewoks. I'm not gonna lie there. But yeah, I mean, we could have got Wookiees. That would have been better. Let's do the Wookiees. That would have been fun, right? Kashyyyk. Everyone would have been down for some Wookiee.
Yeah, action. Make it the Battle of Kashyyyk too.
Yes.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been a lot of fun. I'm not going to sit here and say that this film is without flaws. It's certainly not stupid, and it's very entertaining. And it's certainly better than Rise of Skywalker, which is utter garbage. What a horrible mess to end the trilogy and leave us with a bad taste in our mouths and the stupid reveal. J.J. Abrams going back on what Rian Johnson established and being like, no, you're a Palpatine. Well, that's just stupid. And then Snoke being some creation of Palpatine's and Palpatine being a clone and Rey's father being a clone of Palpatine.
I mean, to be fair, the Mandalorian's kind of getting there now.
How do you mean?
Spoiler alert for Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 4. Don't listen if you haven't seen it, and you should watch it because it's great. Clearly, the remnants of the Empire are trying to clone something or create something using the child's blood, because they talked about M counts, which is obviously midichlorians, and they're trying to either infuse midichlorians into the Death Trooper looking guys, or in those like test tube looking things. Those look kind of like the Snoke clones that are shown in Rise of Skywalker, so we are definitely getting some shenaniganery like that, and I am excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it there, so
okay.
Also, I'd definitely be on board if they were trying to make force sensitive stormtroopers or something like that. That would definitely be more interesting than incorporating Snoke. Leave Snoke out of this. I liked what Rian did with Snoke. I think that was great. I thought that was unexpected that you'd kill Snoke in the second film of the franchise. Rise of Skywalker is a horrible film. There's no redeeming quality about it. And then we get
the whole Death Star sequence is phenomenal. Kylo and Rey in the Death Star is one of the best Star Wars sequences ever.
The entire Death Star sequence is not phenomenal. Also, I do have a critique overall in the entire sequel trilogy. The lightsaber action had left a lot to be desired. Except for the Rey and Kylo fighting the Praetorian guards in The Last Jedi. Except for that. That was awesome. Aside from that, the trilogy as a whole left a lot to be desired. Now, on the Death Star, in the trailer, they have that freaking 2 seconds or 1 second, whatever long it was, that I spent 6 months analyzing and rewatching of Dark Rey and her double-bladed lightsaber that can flip out, you know. I spent so long watching that, and they freaking did what I was afraid they were going to do. They made it some vision of what she could be like in Episode 5, where Luke kills Vader, and then it's revealed that, you know, Vader is Luke, right? Whatever. They freaking took that route, and I was so pissed off, because I know, I am certain of this, there's no doubt in my mind that they did that just so they could have that 2 seconds in the trailer. That's the only reason they did it. I guarantee it. Pisses me off, man.
it's a good moment where Rey sees what she could be, just like Luke saw what he could be.
Don't put it in the trailer.
It's if you're getting mad about the trailer, I think you're reaching for straws here.
No, I'm getting mad about the film. Stupid.
So would you say Solo is better?
No, not at all. Solo is flaming hot garbage. Solo has nothing desirable about it.
Solo is better than...
Is trash.
A lot Solo is trash. Of mainline Star Wars movies.
It's better than none of the mainline Star Wars movies. It's better than Rise of Skywalker, and that's pissing me off now that I'm thinking about it.
You just said that it wasn't.
It's not better than Rise of Skywalker.
You just said it was.
No, I didn't. I definitely did not say that Solo was a better film than Rise of Skywalker. No,
you said, I asked if Solo is better, and you said absolutely not. And then you just said, and Solo is better than Rise of Skywalker, which is pissing me off.
No, I said, I did not say that.
All that said.
You misheard me. I didn't say that.
Rogue One is the worst Star Wars movie. We all know that.
How can you say that?
It's not. It's the second worst.
No, how can you say that?
Because
what about the film? If we're getting controversial and we're getting heated, right? That's
heated. That's
the crux of this segment, right?
We're so angry.
No bad blood between us. But how can you say that? Why is it the worst or the second worst Star Wars movie to you?
Okay.
Since this conversation has kind of become overall about Star Wars and not specifically Return.
You're not wrong. Don't interrupt me while I speak.
Go ahead.
Rogue One has zero characters that I care about. Zero characters that we really learn enough about to care about. They all die at the end, which we expected. That leaves zero impact because, as I said, we don't care about them. The only cool part of the movie is the last 20 minutes, but I am not invested in that in the slightest because, well, I don't care about the characters. There are 2 minutes of this movie that are good. And not only are those 2 minutes good, they are great. Everything else is just totally hollow because nothing about any of these main characters, or in general, any of the characters, makes me invest in what they are doing. They are just people who are in the rebellion because they rebel. What? That's nothing. There's no motivation. We get the silly thing with Mads Mikkelsen. Sure. That's it. Would give me anything else to grasp onto these characters. Give me some personality traits. It's just, oh, and the loves, like Cassian and Jin apparently are into each other at the end. That, what the heck? It's just a mess. Man, Rogue One was such a missed opportunity. It was a bad movie.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that. But I don't think it was a bad movie because I thought it was, there was a lot of fun, thrilling action sequences. I thought I remained engaged even though the characters were bleh. I was living for the moments where Darth Vader showed up, and that was great. I loved that. Tarkin was interesting. They did a much better job on Tarkin than they did on resurrecting young Carrie Fisher. That was weird. That was really
both
weird.
Were weird.
But you could say that Tarkin was weird. You could say Tarkin was weird too.
That felt insensitive to both of them, honestly.
Well, obviously they got Peter Cushing's permission. I mean, his family's permission to utilize his likeness
in the film. So still, at first they just had his reflection in the glass talking, and I thought they were going to do that the whole time. And I thought that would be really sensitive and cool, and I'd be like, "Yeah, I'm into that." That's
cool. I don't really have any moral qualms against them using his likeness in the film, especially if his family's given their permission. Aside from a lawsuit waiting to happen, it'd be a steaming hot pile of trash if they didn't get their permission. But since they got the permission, I don't have any issues with that. I can't remember. I don't think Carrie Fisher had passed away before.
I don't think
no,
so
that was
either.
after this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it just looked really off.
They could have done a much better job, especially for 2 seconds. It was not good. It was not good. No, I just think that the action sequences were much more interesting and engaging. The battle over that planet. I can't remember the name of that planet. It's not really important. I thought that was kind of fun. I like all the little tie backs, the tie betweens between the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. I thought that was fun, but yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, what you think is wrong, because it's not a great film. It's a good film. It's not the worst film.
It's the second worst. Maybe third worst. It's close with Return of the Jedi for me.
It's way above Rise of Skywalker and Solo. Solo being the worst, uncategorically the worst. Unequivocally the worst. It's the worst.
I love Solo. Film. It might be top five.
I honestly, when I consider the only times I remember Solo as a film is when I'm talking to you, when I'm thinking about Star Wars, watching Star Wars, ranking Star Wars, it never enters the picture in my mind. I don't even, not that I'm consciously refusing to accept it, I just don't remember it.
Then maybe you should watch it again so you can remember it and realize it's good.
No, I just don't remember it exists. It's a bad film. It's real bad. It's bad. It sucks.
Oh, man.
For all the reasons I said last time we did this segment.
Star Wars, am I right? Everyone agrees about everything.
What pisses me off about Disney is I loved everything Star Wars, everything that was put out for Star Wars. And then Disney buys it, and they go and they screw up the sequel trilogy, even though I like two of the three entries, and they put out two crappy anthology films. And yeah, I'm going to say Rogue One shouldn't have been made. Even though we do get the best Darth Vader sequence in all of Star Wars, it still shouldn't have been made.
But never fear. Jon Favreau is here.
Yes. Yes.
Because despite all that crap, we still have The Mandalorian.
The show that is five times more popular than anything else on Disney Plus.
It's literally the only reason most people are subscribed to Disney Plus.
It's the only reason I'm subscribed to Disney Plus, at least till January 15th.
Is that WandaVision?
Yep.
I'm excited for that. Weren't we getting a Loki show too? What happened to that?
Yeah, we're getting a Loki show. That's coming later. And obviously the Winter Soldier thing. That's coming at some point too. Yeah,
less interested in that
Marvel
one.
Marvel What If series.
That I'm excited for.
We're getting Obi-Wan Kenobi. Oh, yeah. We're getting Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's going to be great. I think it's starting filming soon.
Good. Deborah Chow's doing that, and she did some of the best Mandalorian episodes. So I'm down.
What If episode. There's a What If episode. That they've released one screenshot of, but it's what if the Black Panther was Star-Lord, and I think Chadwick Boseman reprised his role for that episode. So I'm pretty excited for that whenever it releases.
I'm really excited for What If. That sounds like so much fun. It's animated, right?
Yeah,
I love animation.
Yeah, you do.
Anyway. That's our spiel on Star Wars and Disney Plus and a whole lot of things you didn't sign up for.
That's right.
Any closing thoughts before we wrap this up forever?
Final thoughts on the show, the podcast as a whole.
Yeah.
Was it first after the first few episodes, I was really digging the idea. I thought it was Elijah's best idea. I loved being able to review the films. I think the first six or seven episodes we were able to do one a week, two movies once a week. That was great. Then we had the period where we're doing the mini casts and alternating every other week. Or that seemed like it took years. That really seemed like it took forever. It took like 8 weeks at least. It may have taken more. I don't I don't recall. And then we've had these episodes since Harry Potter, and I think that they've been a lot of fun. I think my favorite episode that we recorded was the Christopher Nolan special. That was definitely my favorite, being able to watch all of the Christopher Nolan films, all 10, excluding Tenet because it hadn't come out yet. Being able to watch all 10 in 1 week, I thought that was extremely fun, being able to rank it. And we just had some fun talking about Memento and The Prestige in that episode.
Yeah, that one was great. I think we can both agree the worst episode was the one we watched, The Great Silence.
No, the worst episode was the first episode that never released.
You're not wrong.
The one where our audio was unsynced.
Yeah.
That's
no good times. The worst movie we watched was The Great Silence.
Yeah. What's the second worst movie we watched?
Well, for you, it's probably... For you, it's Always Be My Maybe.
Oh, I hate that film.
Exactly. For me, I honestly don't know. I'd have to think about it.
I had to watch
A Wrinkle in Time. What'd you have to watch?
Raging Bull. You picked Raging Bull, then you opted out.
My bad.
I watched it, and then you were like, now I'm good.
Anyway.
Raging Bull was not very interesting. That was kind of boring. That movie was only, I think it was under 2 hours, but it felt like a long movie.
That's not good.
No. What was your favorite episode?
Man. I didn't love the movie, obviously, but I really enjoyed recording the Good, Bad, and Ugly episode. I felt like we had really good conversation about that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I liked the episode. Great movie. It's pretty good. I liked the episode where we talked about our favorite of 2019, which was like a year ago now, because we got to talk about like 1917 and Knives Out and Farewell. That was fun.
That was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of good times. It's kind of cool to have all this recordings of our conversation out there. 30 plus hours of that should be fun if you really miss hearing my voice, Elijah, because you don't hear it enough, you don't communicate enough, you can always go back to the podcast.
What a great
idea.
We'll
always have we watch movies.
We will, and I think that's going to be it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Oh, what?
I was going to say, although I will say, it's not like we're going to stop talking about movies. Not going to be.
Never going to talk to you again. Goodbye forever.
That is sad. Goodbye forever. Until when we discuss movies privately.
Okay, that's going to be it for us. Thank you all for so much for listening to us these past 30-odd weeks. Maybe not that many. I don't know. But it's been a lot of fun.
About that.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. And maybe we'll see you in the future with some new project we're trying. But in the meantime, I've been Elijah. He's been Forrest. You guys have been beautiful. And for the last time, this has been We Watch Movies. Thanks so much.